Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, actor Stephen Dorff, and then the news is coming in this half of the show. First, we'll tell you about LifeLock. Criminals hide malware in emails that look like real invoices, invites, or payment info with documents attached to say when you clicked installs malware in your computer. So they're just going to send you that stuff, and then you're going to click on it, and then you're going to get malware in your computer. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. This holiday season, you can miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit alone and bank statements. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information is being used in their network, they will send you an alert. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you feel warm and protected this holiday season. Save up to 25% off your first year at LifeLock.com with promo code Adam. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com. Promo code Adam.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Stephen Dorff's Birthday Cocktail Party. For July 29th, let's see who's on the guest list. The guy who invented the safety pin and the sewing machine, Walter Hunt. Fascist Italian dictator Benito Mussolini is here. The murder victim from Los Angeles' notorious Black Dahlia case, Elizabeth Short. Charles Schwab. Peter Jennings. Documentarian Ken Burns. Fashion personality Tim Gunn. The greatest bass player to ever live, from the greatest band to ever play, from Rush, Geddy Lee, Martina McBride, Will Wheaton, and Dak Prescott. Stephen Dorff is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Quite a roster, Stephen. Good to talk to you. The movie Embattled is available tomorrow in select theaters and on video on demand as well. Nice job in the movie, Stephen.
Oh, thanks, Adam. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you must have had to train quite a bit to do all the MMA stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of intense. It was kind of a cliff note version of what I would have liked to have done. But in the end, I had a great team of guys that got me through the MMA stuff pretty quickly, but I just finished a 110 or 105 day shoot on True Detective. So when I only had about 6 weeks before Embattled started, and I knew that going in, but in retrospect, I would have liked to have had a little more time, but it was cool, man. We made it happen.
I think.
And that would have been tough. And in True Detective, he ends up being what? 65 or plus, yeah, a senior citizen. It'd have been tough if he was all yoked during the last couple episodes.
Yeah, that was the thing, was I knew I was coming into that, so I didn't know how to do that. I didn't want to start training when I'm wearing a big belly as an old man. But now I had a great trainer, this guy Josh Perzo, Adam, out of Montreal, who's worked with me before, and he's great. And then I got down to Alabama and I met Chris Connolly, and who's an incredible trainer of UFC fighters and has a great stable of talent that he represents and works with. And so they just, him and Fernando Chin, and just kind of created some really incredible fights. And we started learning them, me and Darren Mann, this really good Canadian young actor, my son.
He is. And, you know, we were talking about psychology before this, and something stuck out in my head when you said, well, you didn't know if you had much time in between True Detectives and this, but you just said, let's do it. And that is a mentality that more people should have, where you just go, well, it's going to be tough, or it's going to be a lot of work, or it's going to be a tight squeeze, but let's just do it. Like, just. Because that's basically how life works. You know, nothing is ever perfect. I mean, I made an independent film and my agent was yelling at me, you start an independent film right when you're doing, taking over for Howard Stern on morning radio. And I said, there's never a good time to do an independent film. There's never, I have 6 weeks of nothing to do and a $1.5 million to flush down the toilet. It's like, it's never a good time. There's never really a good time to do anything. So just sign up and throw, just go for it.
See where the cards fall. I knew I had a great script because David McKenna is a friend of mine and a great writer. He wrote some of my favorite films, like, you know, Blow with Johnny Depp, and, you know, he wrote American History X. He wrote SWAT too. I really loved American History X and Blow. And I just read this script and I thought, wow, what an unlikable character, beast of a character, but, you know, what a challenge in its own sense. So I thought, you know, and I loved the way this first time director, Nick Sarsikoff, put it all together. I mean, he just used some great technicians and really made it more of a father-son dysfunction drama than it is just a fight movie. But when we get into those fights, those fans, I think, will see some stuff they haven't necessarily seen before in an MMA film, because there hasn't really been that many films based in MMA, and the UFC and the whole sport has become, it just seems like it's the biggest sport in the world next to football or soccer in Europe. And, you know, it's kind of diminished boxing, unless Tyson Fury's fighting. There's no, you know, we don't really talk about lightweight boxers anymore. I mean, at least I don't. I used to love boxing, but this whole MMA thing's kind of taken it to an extreme, as our kind of like our world. You know, it's like the more extreme the sport, the more extreme the fans and the pay-per-views and all the craziness that goes with it.
Well, you know, if you really just sort of think about boxing. So when we were growing up, it was always like, well, who would win in a fight? A martial artist or Muhammad Ali? Or who would win? A wrestler or, you know, a weightlifter or bodybuilder, something like that. So boxing was just a way for us to decide who the baddest man in the land was. But once they opened it up to UFC, and now you're using grappling and jiu-jitsu and feet and everything – well, now it's just a pure version of who's the baddest man in the land. And boxing is nice, but it doesn't really determine who the baddest man in the land is, in literally, quite literally, the world. So,
the
heavyweight champion of the UFC is basically the toughest guy on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And guess what? They'll probably, once there's a heavyweight in the UFC that creates a real momentum as far as, you know, a stardom like a Conor McGregor in the light and middle, I guarantee it, they'll offer Tyson Fury and him a fight, you know, at some point, you know. They'll offer a big heavyweight champion from boxing to come in and maybe join the cage, or vice versa, the way Conor fought Mayweather, you know.
Well, it's all just it's basically us saying, you know, Snickers bars are good, but what if you deep fried them? You know what I mean? It's like us, like everything is just an extreme version of what it used to be. And maybe it's just because our pleasure centers are being burnt out or something that we now need to see this insane extreme. I mean, if you think about the X Games, think about the shit they're doing on those skateboards when you see like the big air ramp and stuff. I mean, it makes Evel Knievel look like Mrs. Doubtfire. Like the shit 14-year-olds are doing on a skateboard now, when they drop in and do the big air and they just launch themselves 150 feet in the air. Like, it is insane what people are doing.
Yeah. Or the snowboarding world too, which goes with the whole skating world. But like Sean White's an old buddy of mine, and he, when he did that last run in the Winter Olympics, or you know, that perfect run, and he won the gold again. I'm just like, I mean, it's insane that the air that he's getting and some of these kids are getting. It's, and you know, but I have a lot of respect for skateboarding and snowboarding. And
I'm looking down here, speaking of shit you do when you're young, you attended several private schools growing up and were expelled out of five of them.
Yeah, that's always been like a little of an extreme in the press story. You know, my mom was called and asked, they basically just said, we'd love it if Stephen would go somewhere else.
They allowed you to resign.
I didn't burn the kitchen down or, you know, getting any fist fights really. I just didn't like the LA private school system. And I didn't really like, the fact that I didn't have a teacher that really made me interested in wanting to learn. You know, she didn't really, I was a different kind of kid. I didn't really, you know, yeah, I was a Cub Scout. I did Little League and stuff, but I wasn't like the greatest athlete in the world. I was a creative person and a jokester and somebody that just didn't want to be in the classroom in a uniform. That just pissed me off.
You grew up in LA?
Yeah, I grew up in LA since I was 3 months old. I was a baby. My parents met in an elevator in Manhattan, but my dad was going to college, the University of Georgia in Athens. My mom was staying with him. And I was born in Atlanta when I was, when he was just graduating. And then we moved to LA and he was a kind of a struggling songwriter sent there by a publisher and then started writing some big old songs.
Where did you grow up in LA?
My first place was an apartment when I was born, basically 3 months old. I lived off Tujunga Avenue where that whole Vitello's Robert Blake thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
That was my street. It was right behind the CBS MTM, the Mary Tyler Moore block there.
Yeah.
And then my dad wrote Every Which Way But Loose for the Clint Eastwood movie, which became a number one in the world. And then that song. And so he, I guess, made some coin. And I grew up. My brother was born, my little brother. And then a few years later, and then we were going to these private schools, you know, because my dad was becoming a big songwriter. And I had some great schooling, but I think it wasn't until I was about 17 or, you know, 15 and started working. I was on Roseanne and I was doing a lot of TV shows and starting to work a lot and as a guest actor and things. And I had a teacher that would always work with me and I kind of liked that better, you know.
Every which way but loose, you turn me.
Stephen's dad's in the Songwriting Hall of Fame, so he wrote a couple of good songs.
Yeah, I actually inducted him. Well, I gave the speech.
Wait, let's hear it. Did he song? Dad wrote theme song for Murphy Brown. Well, that'll get you into the Hall of Fame alone. Spencer for Hire, too.
He wrote the theme to Growing Pains, too.
Oh, that.
I thought Alan Thicke said he did that.
My dad wrote it. Alan wrote a lot of themes before, but they hired my dad.
Oh, is that why your dad poisoned him 3 years ago? Zoe's very suspicious.
Alan was a great man, and he was a really nice, you know, he's a great friend of my family, and I'm still good friends with Robin, his son, and Robin and my brother actually went to school together at one of those fancy private schools.
So when your dad started hitting it big, did you guys move to Malibu or the West Side? Where'd you go?
Yeah, I mean, my dad, you know, he wrote the songs. So he was kind of in the background, you know. He wrote Through the Years, Kenny Rogers. He wrote for, you know.
He wrote Through the Years, did you say?
Yeah.
Huge hits.
Oh, I love that goddamn song.
Yeah, my dad's the king of the ballads. He's still doing it for all the divas, you know, the Barbaras and the Celine Dions and.
He wrote I Cross My Heart, which has been played at 1,000 weddings a year.
Yeah, was that George Strait?
George Strait, yeah.
Yeah, my dad's still going. He's 71. We've had a few big tragedies as I've gotten older. I lost my little brother a few years ago, and he was just a monster songwriter in Nashville. He wrote all Blake Shelton's.
Oh, wow.
A lot of his number ones. And Kenny Chesney, Save It for a Rainy Day. And Andrew was 40 years old, about to lapse my dad a few times, I think. He would have definitely been in that Hall of Fame, but he passed away and kind of changed my life. And then I bought a ranch in Tennessee where my brother lived, and that's where I am right now. And I finally got to move into it during this interesting period in our world. And I was kind of going crazy in LA, not being able to work, not being able to
do right. anything.
But now I'm out here in God's country, which is a little weird because I'm seeing all these strange creatures that I hadn't seen before, like armadillos and weird things. That it's like this. I'm like a city boy in the country.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. LA is, and Brian's got a question. I'll get to it in a second, but the thing about being locked down in L.A., L.A. is a place where you're supposed to do stuff. You know, right. people come here to start their careers or their ambitions or whatever it is. So when you're locked down in L.A., it's kind of like being on an amusement park when the roller coaster stops and you're just sitting on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or you're in an amusement park and there's no rides.
There's no rides. But everyone else who's gone somewhere or gone to the country or whatever, that just feels like good living. It just feels like a quiet life, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, look, I love LA. I have a love-hate. I love coming to LA after a long period of being on the road working, or, you know, I love it. And that's where it was my city, where I'm from, you know. But I've never quite felt the way I felt in the last few months there.
Brian, go ahead.
It felt uncomfortable, and I just didn't like the vibes, the energy, the city, that just needed a break. So I'm never really in LA for 7 months straight, just sitting anyway. I'm usually there for 2 months, 3 months, leave, you know? And I like it like that. But, you know, I just hope we all get a vaccine soon and we're all healthy and we all can get back to being in the world again and have some positivity going, maybe.
Brian,
here. A question about the new movie, Stephen. I've been a fan of yours ever since Backbeat. I loved your Stu Sutcliffe. I'm a big fan of that movie, and I've been a fan of yours ever since then. And I wanted to know that I haven't seen, I confess, I have not seen every one of your movies, but I thought you as Cash Boykins was outstanding. One of the best performance I've seen of yours. I really, really liked it a lot. I'm wondering what drew you to the character, because not only is he unlikable, he starts off as a little two-dimensional, but then by the end of the movie, he's a very complicated character, still an a-hole, but a pretty complicated character. I'm wondering how much you discussed the character. You said you know the writer. How much you discussed the character, how much you developed it, things like that. I'm curious.
You know, it's weird. I just kind of, I guess as an actor, you look at the overall piece when you read a script. And when I read this script, I was really moved by the Jet story, my son's story in the movie, you know, the, being a sibling to being an older brother to a sibling with special needs sibling, you know, with Williams syndrome.
Right, right.
What does that do to, so, you know, I was moved, the my ex's role, the Elizabeth Reeser part, I was moved by all this stuff. I fucking hated Cash Boykins, you know.
And, he's not a likable guy. He's entertaining, but he's not, you know.
You know, but then again, you know, would I want to, you know, be best friends with Floyd Mayweather? I don't know if I would have too much to get along. You know, he's a brilliant fighter. He's, you know, all these lightweight champions, whether it's MMA, whether, you know, I kind of studied a lot of them. The antithesis of this guy to me, as far as look and feel, felt like Conor McGregor. You know, when we made the film, it was before Conor lost to Khabib, who's just monstrous, incredible fighter all around. But Conor had a swagger and a kind of a, an electric kind of stigma.
He has a charisma.
He has a charisma, but then he also brings that charisma and he has raw talent in the ring. You know, to be able to do what he did to a friend of mine, Cowboy Cerrone, who's one of the toughest dudes I've ever met, to be able to take him out of his game in 10 seconds and end it. You know, I don't know. A lot comes with experience, a lot. I don't know what it is. What I tried to do is emulate, take a piece from a lot of different people, and focus. I studied Conor a lot. I studied the way he fought, his kind of striking kind of speed and his kind of, but to go back to your question, you know, a great character is a great character. He can be unlikable, you know? And I thought about it after I read it. I thought, geez, you know, what about when Bob De Niro went and did Raging Bull and played Jake LaMotta, you know, was that a fun part to play every day? Probably not, you know, was Cash a, you know, was I uncomfortable playing him at times? Sure. You know, I had to go, but I believe in commitment. And if whatever role you're doing, I believe in committing 100%. So I was down to offend whoever was going to get offended. I didn't care. I was going to read David McKenna's script as he wrote it, because the only way to really tell this story without it just becoming a typical happy ending kind of vanilla coded, you know, Cash becomes great dad at the end out of nowhere, which is, you know, a lot of 90% out of 100 what it would have become. You know, we wanted to go hard with it. And this is a guy that will never change. Maybe he'll come around and be a little softer. And I tried to bring some human emotion to him by the end without giving too much away there. But overall, it was a great piece. I wanted to act in it. I wanted to be involved. You know, it's really rare these days to read great scripts. And I thought it also was moving even without the UFC element. Then you put this over the top kind of monstrous character in the front as Cash. And I was just kind of like, wow, it's a family drama set against the backdrop of MMA and the UFC. And I,
he's got a little bit of great Santini in him too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
the family dictator.
Yeah.
By the way, so, Conor McGregor took out Cowboy Cerrone with his shoulder, which is
I think it was that first knee, I think, broke, you know, knocked the fucking, and then he came right in with those two shoulders.
He was throwing him. Rarely does one take out an opponent with a shrug, but this worked.
Wow.
You've never seen it in UFC. He was, and Cowboy didn't seem to know what to make of it, but he literally shouldered him when they were in tight.
And Cowboy, I've known for now about, I made a movie called Felon years ago. Really cool movie with Sam Shepard and Val Kilmer, and Cowboy worked on that in Mexico, and he's, ever since then, I was a friend of his, and I watched him fight a few times in the arena, and man, this guy could just take anything. I was very excited about this chance he got, because I really thought he was going to take Connor's head off. And, you know, it's just such an adrenaline sport. It's such a freak thing. It can be over in 2 seconds.
That was a quick one. And then Khabib, who's the baddest man on the planet, kind of reminds me of we can show you the clip. He's mashing him with his left shoulder in the bridge of the nose. The thing about, you know, it's funny. A lot of these guys kind of remind me of Khabib is like and a lot of these guys are this way. They're like reptiles in that they don't have a medium speed. So Khabib is either beating the shit out of somebody in the ring or going over the fence and trying to beat the shit out of their posse in the audience, or he's weeping openly about his father in the ring.
He doesn't.
And quitting. He doesn't have it. So, you know, it's like
Abu Dhabi. That was in Abu Dhabi because my trainer, Chris Connolly, had the fight, the undercard before that. Anyway.
I was going to say, so reptiles are like, he's like a reptile. A lot of these guys are that way. Like in that when you see a python, the python's just sitting there. It's like it's not doing anything. And then it's on top of you, killing you. It doesn't really have a medium. They don't have a medium speed. It's kind of it's an interesting wiring, which is you can't really have a medium speed if you're going to get in the octagon. You have to be completely cool, cucumber, you know, out of body. You know, I'm just walking into this octagon in front of 18,000 people with a guy who's a trained assassin who's going to kill me. I can't be overwhelmed by that. A real low heart rate. And then when the bell rings, I go into full python pounce mode. But there's not a lot of in between with any of these guys.
No. And you feel it when you meet him. I mean, you know, Cowboy is, I wouldn't say as flashy as a Conor McGregor. I don't know Conor, but Cowboy's a great guy. And he's a real cowboy, you know, in New Mexico. And he kind of races motorcycles and invited me to play paint gun war with him, which I'm sure was an extreme paint pellet war. And I was a little frightened because I was shooting it at the time and I didn't want to
agitate him. Well, especially when he runs out of paintballs and starts coming at you with his hands, you know.
You know, there is a thing called acting and that's what I do. But, you know, I have a lot of respect for these guys. But, you know, Conor, I mean, when Cowboy walks into a bar or something, we're just going to watch a football game or something. And this guy is just a tough dude, and you can feel it. You can feel that he's had, I think he has the record for the most UFC fights of a fighter that's still going. He holds some record for something, but you know, he was originally in Embattled, and we had a great scene, and it's a bummer, but it was cut out, which kind of sucks. But at the same time, it was cut out not because it wasn't a good scene. I saw the scene. It was funny as hell. It just didn't quite work in the cut because emotionally we go with Cash's ex and Jet's mom at that point in the restaurant. But it was a funny scene where he played an autograph guy, and he was like role reversals. He came up to me and asked me for – he was geeking out on me, and I basically wrote something rude in the autograph. And he's like, what the fuck, Cash? You know, and it was like kind of a funny little – but anyway, I love the guy. I mean, and they've been really sweet to me and helped me over the years on things.
Judgment Night. Now, the reason I bring up Judgment Night is because I worked on Judgment Night.
You did?
I was a stand-in for one of the bad guys.
You never told me that when I came and did your show before.
It's the kind of thing one doesn't reveal on the first date, you know?
Remember, I came to the studio with you last time.
I didn't say anything about Judgment Night.
I don't think so, but that's crazy. So you were a stand-in for like Everlast or Dennis Leary or somebody?
No, I was the third or fourth bad guy with the long hair. I can't remember the guy's name. And
I was 19, and that's like the movie that had the big soundtrack. That's what.
Yes,
that's right. It was the rock and rap soundtrack, right?
Wasn't that the big thing? Yeah, it had this kind of big cult following because of that. You know, the movie wasn't bad either, but
no.
I
enjoy that movie, but the question, what was going on in the set is the good guys, the actors, and the bad guys, the actors, started their own rivalry. Like it actually, the art became life.
I wanted to hang out with the bad guys because it was like, you know, Dennis Leary and Everlast I knew from L.A. and, you know, House of Pain was, you know, big band that I grew up to in L.A. You know, I knew Everlast for a long time, but then it became this like, I'm like, guys, I was 19, but I guess I knew a little too much then, but I was kind of like, we don't have to do this, guys. It's not really brain surgery, this picture. We're just a bunch of guys in a Winnebago and you're chasing us. We don't really have to get method on this. You know, when I was doing Public Enemies, Michael Mann's movie, in that one, we took it a little more seriously. The good guys and Johnny and the Dillinger gang would hang and we'd live over here. And the cops and Christian Bale and all those kids would live on the other side, you know. But I don't know, on Judgment Night, but they were serious about it. I really wanted to hang with the bad guys, too, because they were hitting that China Club every night. And that was the hot spot back then.
Michael DiLorenzo. Oh, does that sound weird? Could you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Michael DiLorenzo.
That's the guy.
The actor?
I evidently, because I was standing in for him. I asked
you
if you could.
From Chicago?
Hmm?
Are you from Chicago?
No, I'm from L.A., and I had a buddy who was the second AD, Robbie Levine, on that movie.
Come on out.
And you guys shot in Chicago, and then when you're done shooting in Chicago, you're coming to shoot in L.A., and he said, I can get you a job as a stand-in. And I was like, that's the best-sounding job I've ever heard of.
Yes.
Do you know where everyone would know Michael DiLorenzo from? If not him, his character for sure. He was Private William Santiago in For Your Good Men.
Oh, that's right.
The private who dies and kicks off the plot of the movie.
Yeah, I know who Michael is.
Yeah, he had obviously short hair in that movie, but in our movie.
Our film,
he had long hair, so it's like a completely different. That was one of the things. I had short hair. And he had this long shoulder length hair. And I remember the lighting director.
They didn't put some weird wig on you because normally they'll do that just for the lighting and stuff. They'll put some like moppy wig on you, on the stand in that doesn't, you know, that doesn't really resemble the locks of the actor.
I was just, he is.
I remember.
Okay. There he is.
Peter Green, where have you been?
I'll tell you, you want a fun watch? You could do a lot worse than Judgment Night. It's a fun movie to watch. All right, Stephen, let me give you a plug here. Embattled's the name of the movie. It's very good, and it's available tomorrow in select theaters and video on demand as well. Any Twitter or websites or anything you want to give a shout out to?
I don't really do the old social media.
Good for you.
But I think it's like IFC embattled, but I could get one of the PR people to call your people, Adam, and tell you that because I'm an idiot and I don't know that.
I'm just as idiotic. All right. Well, when you come back to LA, come see us in the studio.
I'd love to, man. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for everything.
Stephen Dorff, everybody. Thanks, you guys. All right, let me hit Madison Reed here. Madison Reed, Mister. So Madison Reed makes beautiful hair coloring for women. Lynette loves this stuff. Gina uses it on occasion as well. And they said, well, what about the fellas? And so they said, well, how about we make Madison Reed Mister? It's a great blending, natural-looking color for your hair and beard. You can see the before and after shots. They look fantastic. No shoe polish look here. Maybe you just want to... a little more pepper and a little less salt. Well, Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find the color, and you can match it on their website. It's quick and easy. Just apply the color gel and then the activator. Let it sit for 10 minutes. Rinse and shampoo. Plus, they'll deliver it right to your door. It is Madison Reed Mister, right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMister.com. And use code Adam10 for 10% off, plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam10.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, move over, John Legend and Idris Elba and Blake Shelton and Dwayne Johnson. We have a new sexiest man alive, according to People magazine. Congratulations to Michael B. Jordan. Mm. He is now People's sexiest man alive. It's 7 years ago, People magazine tapped him as the one to watch in that year's sexiest man alive issue. And they correctly predicted this moment. They predicted it. They also picked it. And the third straight year for a black man to be chosen. And again, we got John Legend, Idris Elba, Blake Shelton, Dwayne Johnson. And now we have Michael B. Jordan. Speaking of boxers.
John Legend is attractive, but I don't know if I have him in the sexiest man alive.
He got a lot of shit for that. He'll be the first one to tell you, according to his Instagram, that he was trolled pretty hard for having that honor bestowed upon him.
So we got 3 years running with a black man, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
So now it's going to be weird if you do Conan O'Brien next year, right?
Like, you'll get the bends.
Weird on a number of levels. Yes, it would.
But there's kind of an element of like when you have a black secretary of labor or something and then they have to be replaced. Now you kind of have to find another black secretary of labor.
Right.
So this is it.
Mm. You got to pivot to some other race or, you know, mm-hmm. something.
Well, now more than ever, my magazine Honky Style. I think now it's about time we get going with that shit. All right. So
even Dorff could grace the first issue.
That's right. Sexiest man alive.
He'd be great.
Don't you wish your dad wrote a shitload of hit songs?
Oh, my God. One hit song would be amazing.
Yeah.
And for the rest of your goddamn life.
We all know all the 80s and 90s sitcoms, and they're all good and delightful. But Growing Pains, top three, possibly number one, best theme song.
Every Which Way But Loose was his first big. That's the one where Clint Eastwood had the orangutan who punched people.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Yeah.
And what was the Kenny Rogers song?
That's right. What's that?
What was the Kenny Rogers song?
Oh, Through the Years?
Oh, Through the Years.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. I love that song. Love that song.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're trying to party in New Orleans for Carnival, pass. Because you're probably going to get booted right off of Bourbon Street. No parades of any kind will be permitted for the 2021 Carnival season. That's the official website. The mayor wrote on Facebook that with COVID spreading, we need to modify Carnival. Now, they're not saying it's canceled. They're just saying there's no parades. So I can't take one more virtual event when it comes to like Halloween.
Couldn't they have people at the beginning kind of staggering people? Like, you go get, you know, 10 feet down the road, then you go.
Spoken like somebody who's never been to Carnival.
I have not.
Never been to Carnival. I haven't either, but.
To substitute for what would be a great event, could they
not? Yeah, but they're already staggering because they're shit face. There's no way to permit to get those people to stand 6 feet away from each other. They do the, don't they do the annual greasing of the pole the night before, so people don't try to climb the pole in the middle of the French Quarter. These people are treated like toddler zombies. They're already a mess and wasted and trying to climb everything and take all their clothes off. So I don't know how they're going to enforce this.
I've been there during Mardi Gras. I guess we shot man show bits there, but yeah.
Tommy Lasorda.
It's bedlam over there. It's Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah. Toughest
Sodom
job.
Sodom and Lasorda.
Toughest job in the world is cameraman on Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras, because Jimmy and I would have to walk and he'd have to film us, but he'd have to walk backwards.
Yeah.
Imagine walking backwards down Bourbon Street in the height of the humanity. He always had his left hand would be on the camera and his right hand was feeling behind him like the whole time.
A lot of times when that's going to be a big part of your role, you have like an assistant that's literally there just to hold your back and to walk backwards with you.
Yeah, there was probably
you didn't get one of those.
Well, he probably did get somebody, but there's such a throng of humanity that there's not enough assistance in the world. And I remember that. I remember going out and filming. And I remember this one, too, because it always used to drive me nuts. Inevitably, the camera would run out of batteries and you'd have to stop. And then someone would go, where are the backup batteries? And someone would go, it's in the van. And then you'd go, where's the van? I go, it's on the other side of town. And I would always be like, we know the batteries are going to wear out. Why don't we have the batteries with us? This is why people hated working with me. But it was always, we got them. They're in the van. We just got to go get them. It's like, but it's a long ways away. But, yeah, those kinds of jobs where something happens repeatedly, you know it's going to happen, right. But it doesn't – people, there's a lot of that in life where it's like, this is going to happen. You should be prepared for this happening because it's your job and it always happens. All right. Sorry, Gina. What else?
Well, let's stay with the fun and possibly tacky events. Your favorite Adam Carolla, John Waters, he, you love hairspray. You love polyester. You love, shit. Now they all escape me. Thank you. But this year, you get a very special
treat. Oh, how about Cereal Mom?
Pecker.
Oh, I forgot about that. Crybaby.
Crybaby. So- he's such a hack. God, we have to respect him because he's kitschy.
Well, you might have to tolerate him if you're planning on watching the Pornhub Awards.
Oh,
he has signed on as a presenter for the Adult Film Honor, which is going virtual, of course, this year. He tells the New York Post, good filth on demand is what we all need to stay home and be sexually safe and socially distant in this obscene pandemic. Giving a Pornhub Award seems like a civic duty to me. So he'll be there.
Sounds like $2,200 in a Southwest round trip ticket. That's what it sounds like to me. Ugh, that guy.
So you've never interviewed him, right?
I think I have.
And I mean, wasn't he just delightful as a person or no? He seems so fun.
I have. Okay. So you all know that Ellen has driven me insane for 15 years, right?
Yes. Yes,
because I cannot stand that when someone puts something forward, and I always hate. It's why I was never like, it's why I never like Marilyn Manson or like all those bands that are like, I'm this whole thing over here, but there's not a lot of ability, Rob Zombie or something. It's like not a lot of ability with a lot of sizzle, not a lot of steak. I like everything. I like all the work to speak for itself. And John Waters' movies are fucking embarrassingly, insultingly bad, but he gets a free pass because he's this guy that he invented. But really, he's just a fucking nerd from high school that did his
Baltimore.
Little penciled-in mustache and his seersucker suits and stuff. And he's created this whole persona, which none of the great musicians and or none of the great directors or writers, they don't have that persona because their persona is their work. You know what I mean? Like their work speaks for itself.
Yeah,
if he put on fucking sweatpants and a members only jacket and went to fucking Supercuts, we wouldn't know his name. That's what I'm saying. Thus, he's a hack. And his movies are fucking insultingly bad. They're not funny. I mean, he tries to do comedy. No.
Do you think he hides behind the fact that they're supposed to be insultingly bad?
Well, okay.
It's a bit of a cheat.
I hope he doesn't open a restaurant. Yes. Well, how about this experiment? Write a good movie. How about that? Maybe try that.
Then we'll compare.
A really good example of anti-example of what Adam's talking about is David Lynch, who, you know, made a career off of doing just weird, surreal stuff people had trouble following, not mainstream, blah, he was strange, blah, blah. And then a few years ago, Adam, I don't know if you heard of this movie or seen it, or Gina, he made a movie called The Straight Story. Just a beautiful, brilliant little movie, not weird at all. It's about a fucking old man, Richard Farnsworth, who rides from like Nebraska to Wyoming on his tractor to his like dying brother.
That one.
Farnsworth is nominated for an Oscar. It's beautiful, it's brilliant, and it's like, yeah, he has the goods. He can make these weird artsy movies, avant-garde, that's on him, do what you do. But he can just nail a perfect, beautiful, straightforward, no pun intended, movie.
Yeah,
I feel the transcendental meditation.
Yeah, I feel that way about musicians or whomever, or painters or whatever. Do something crazy, weird, and wacky, and then do something really brilliant, like a compulsory kind of a thing. And then, you know, like do crazy interpretive dance and then do some killer ballet or jazz or whatever. And then I'll be impressed.
Straight Story is great. Anyone who wants to watch it, you'll love it. It's a good movie.
He is in one of my favorite Simpsons episodes with one of my favorite lines. Remember when John Waters is trying to
Gina,
get...
Gina, I'm going to relieve you. You don't have to like John Waters just because
you like The Simpsons, right?
But I'm saying just because you're a hero to the gay community, you can still not like John Waters. He's horrible at his job.
When did I say I like John Waters? I mean, I do like John Waters.
That's what do you mean? I'm looking at your face. You don't have to say it.
It's one of my favorite Simpsons lines when he can't tell if that character's gay and Homer goes, I like my beer cold, my TV loud, and my homosexuals flaming. Don't get that drop. So let's go to the other side of the spectrum. Let's talk about Quentin Tarantino. So he has some new works coming out, but they're not movies. They're books. One, very interesting. So this is according to the AP. He has a 2-book deal with Harper, beginning with a novelization of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And that's scheduled for next summer. So the book will come out first as this mass market paperback, like the old pulp novel, you know, books that he loves, and will offer, quote, a fresh, playful, and shocking departure from the film. And then his next book, which also I imagine is on brand for Tarantino, nonfiction cinema speculation, which Harper is calling a deep dive into the movies of the 1970s draws in part on the director's
every movie he makes is a deep dive into the movies of the 1970s.
I don't know if you know this name, but draws on his admiration for the late New Yorker critic Pauline Kael. And that I don't know if you saw I'm Thinking of Ending Things, right, Brian?
No,
please see and get
it. Wait.
I see something and I'm going to text you in the middle of the night, but I feel like that's weird.
Yes, I saw it. It was
oh, you wonderful. Didn't care about it. Okay. Mm. Anyway, she makes an appearance in that.
I want Tarantino to make movies, man.
He's that making books.
I know, cool. But I don't like reading. I like watching.
So as a one-time Tarantino super fan, like owned the books about Tarantino, the quickie books, the whatever, I'll quote him and say that he said, if I was ever like a hardcore writer, like if I ever wanted to be a writer, I wouldn't write scripts. I'd write novels. Mm-hmm. So Tarantino's had this in his head for a long time. How this manifests itself, who knows? But he's always been like, yeah, if I was a writer, I'd just write novels. I'm a filmmaker.
I love that guy's films. And, you know, he's, what's he, 2-3 years in between films?
Typically.
Yeah.
I think Django and the other one came out pretty quickly.
Speed that up. Yeah. All right,
Gina.
He's
threatening to rap. Yeah.
Sorry, let's do one more.
All right. Well, let's stay on. Nope. Because we had Stephen Dorff, we're talking about fights and big tough guys. Let's look at Alexei Navikov. He is now the world's strongest man. That competition was held over the weekend. And during the competition, Alexei Navikov from Ukraine set a world record with a 1,185-pound partial deadlift. We have a picture of that. The guy is 24 years old. And the record broke, had stood from way back in 1983. And you want to talk about psyching yourself up for something? During an interview after the lift, he explained, this is how he pumps himself up. You think he's going to go super aggro and like crush a beer can against his head? This is how he pumps himself up. He says, when I walk in, I think, it's not heavy. That's no problem.
Yeah, I don't think that would work for us. It's 1,000, how many?
1,185 pounds.
Wow. He is.
What makes it a partial deadlift?
Yeah, he looks like he's got it straight on up.
Yeah.
That looks like a straight on deadlift, man.
And there were other competitions. It was so fun to watch. I didn't pull it just because I didn't know how much time we'd have, but they're just giant boulders you have to pick up and put on top of this peg. And then you go to the next one, you put on top of this peg. And it looks, I mean, it makes my back hurt to watch it.
Yeah, they do. That's the fun thing about the strongman competitions. They're not just like pushing around weights. They're doing like the keg toss.
Right. And pulling a truck.
And the,
yep, it's fun.
Yeah, pulling an airplane. Although I got to say, the thing about like pulling the airplane with your teeth kind of guys, it seems really impressive, but I don't really I have no idea if it's hard or not. Lifting 1,200 pounds, that I'm aware of. You know what I mean? Right. And even the keg toss, I'm kind of aware of. But it seems like everyone who tries to pull something, they do it.
Yeah, everybody, it's on rollers.
Yeah, it's on wheels. It's meant to be pulled. All right, Gina, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, last but not least, we got Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you probably do one or the other, right? You want to make life a little easier? How about you bundle those policies? Bundle your homeowners and your renters with insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got enough to think about these days. So let's go with Geico. Go to geico.com, get a quote today, see just how much you could be saving when you bundle at geico.com. All right, let's see. You can listen to Perez Hilton and me live on stereo today at 2 p.m. Pacific?
Yeah, a lot.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. I want to thank Stephen Dorff for zooming in. Interesting conversation with him. And Battles, the name of his movie. It's available as we speak in theaters and video on demand. West Palm Beach, Florida, Improv this weekend, November 20th, 21st. We're doing live shows. We're doing stand-up. Gergo's going to be there on Saturday as well. And you can go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows and events and everything you need. Until next time, Adam Carolla, for Stephen Dorff, Gina Grad, and Paul Bryan saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And be sure you get Adam's new book, Become Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. And all the links and everything else are at AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.